It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this Saturday. Captain Mike, good to see you.
Snapper season, that's all over with.
Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Well, yeah,
maybe it isn't.
It'll be probably another week or so we'll find out.
We're hoping.
We're going to have any more season?
We're hoping. Because, okay, what I was told before we went into this last weekend of fishing, that if we did not reach or get very close to the quota
right
by this last weekend, then we might get some more days at Labor Day. But that was not a for sure thing because we hadn't done that 5 days of fishing.
Yeah.
From just the trips you took, what I got to go with you and the day before, you probably reached a quota on the whiz bang.
No. I didn't.
It is my buddy Mike Ward that has pushed us over the quota. This is why we're not going to get a Labor Day season. Thanks, Mike.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but we had to do what we had to do.
We had some great fishing, and I want to talk about that. We'll talk about the trip. We even got our old buddy Captain Bobby Abrascato
offshore.
That
was the fun part.
We got Captain Bobby, the inshore king, offshore.
Yeah, the furthest he ever been out in his life in the Gulf. As much as he fishes,
right,
we took him out further than he's ever been in the Gulf.
Every mile south we'd go, Bobby would go, now this is the farthest I've ever been out. No, this is the farthest I've ever been out. So it was great having him out there. And, of course, snapper fishing, but we did some amberjack fishing as well. You put us on those. And, by the way, I thought I could ask you this right now on the air. Did you get a picture of that hardtail?
No, I did not get a picture of hardtail. I don't know why we didn't take a picture of hardtail. We should have.
Biggest hardtail I've ever caught in my life. I've always wanted to catch a big hardtail.
Yeah.
I caught what I feel was a pretty big hardtail.
So how big do you think he was?
I think he was five,
better than five. I'm saying five, 6 pounds. Yeah, okay. I'm big amberjack. I am big hardtail. I'm sorry. We put him down for a big amberjack.
And he was so big, he ran the fish out. So we're gonna get into that and talk about it on today's show. And, of course, looking forward to hunting season as well. And that's one of the things coming up here next month. It's happening at the grounds, and it's going to combine what we're talking about on this show every week, hunting and fishing. And Josh Woods with the grounds, executive director out there, joins us in studio to talk more about it's the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo.
It is. We're calling it the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo. This will be the first time we've put something like this together.
Thank God y'all did, because this man right here, Mike, can tell you, every year I go, why don't we have something in the fall? Why don't we have something for hunting? I mean, it's like this kind of a hole there.
Yeah, so our organization, so we're, the grounds and the Greater Gulf State Fair, we're a project of the Mobile JCs.
And for years I've and heard years, of them before.
Yeah, a couple times. So for years and years, I guess really recently, the past 3 years, we've been batting something around. So obviously we produce the fair, we have rental events out there, but, you know, we need to come up with something else to engage with the community. Mm-hmm. So, we got several members of our board from the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Radio that join us on the board over at the grounds as well. So we've been batting something around. What can we do? Well, hunting and fishing, that's something that I'd say close to 90% of people in our area do. So really trying to engage with them. And so we came up with the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo with Gulf Coast Expos. They're partnering with us, so we're gonna give it a try and see what we can do.
Well, you know, Josh, I look at this, and you can go west to New Orleans, they have a big one. Go up north to Birmingham and Huntsville, they've got big ones. I mean, this is it led me to always ask why we didn't have one before. So I think you're going to be successful with this.
Yeah, we're hoping so. You know, right now we're up to 45 vendors. Our goal was 50. We're not going to turn away vendors if we get 50 and go home. And, you know, also part of another aspect of this is we want it to be educational for people. You know, there's all kinds of new things that are coming up in the hunting and fishing world, various tactics, different types of products.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we really made a, you know, concerted focus to do is to gather in these experts, and we'll be announcing some of our featured speakers for what we're calling the dockside stage and the campfire stage.
Okay.
So we'll have various, you know, educational components to that as well. So
there's going to be things to do. There's going to be things to look at, but also things to do and learn.
There is. We want to make a full day of it. So we're having this on September 21st and 22nd. That's a Saturday and a Sunday.
Okay.
really want you to come on Saturday and say, you know what, I saw what the lineup on Sunday is. I think I might need to come back. And the cool part about it is you're going to be able to come back on Sunday for free if you come on Saturday. So we're real excited about that. Looking
I like
forward
that.
To it.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, it's good motivation to come back the next day. You already got the paid
ticket. Are you going to have local and national vendors?
We are. So really, you know, obviously as part of a JC project and with the grounds and the Greater Gulf State Fair, we're really hyper-focused on the local things that go on in our community. So one of the things, one of the drawing points is we want to have, you know, as one of our purposes and our mission is to ensure everything we do is excellent. So if you're a patron coming to the fair, we want you to have an excellent experience. If you're someone that rents our facility, we want you to have an excellent experience. So if you're going to attend the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo, if you're a vendor or you're a person just coming in, a patron just coming in, we want that experience to be excellent. So one thing that we're going to do is we're going to take it up to the next level. We're going out, we're finding all these local vendors that have something, you know, to do with the great outdoors that we call, you know, our home here in Mobile, bringing them in, showcasing their products. But on top of that, kind of a little secret thing we're going to be doing is on Friday night before we open, we're going to do a soft opening, and we're going to invite hopefully anywhere from 300 to 500 people from, you know, the national chains, whether that's the sporting and hunting stores that we have in the area or the national chain fishing groups that we have. We're going to get them to come in and some of their representatives to come in on Friday, introduce some of these local vendors that we're trying to get so that we can maybe get, you know, some sort of focus on them and some sort of traction where, you know, if you make a barbecue rub that, you know, that you're marketing or you make a duck call, maybe we can get a connection in that national chain.
That's really good.
Maybe you open a door for some sort of advertising.
That's really good. So somebody who's in this realm as a vendor listening to us right now, the value obviously is going to be being in front of people Saturday and Sunday of this.
That's
but
correct.
That night before, they may meet somebody who is looking for the next whatever.
Right. You might meet the so-and-so with a grocery chain that says, hey, this rub that you got is really good. Let's talk more about this on Monday or Tuesday. Or you might meet a so-and-so from a sporting goods saying, hey, how many duck calls can you make and we can put on our shelves? So really, we want to focus on the vendor, but we also want to focus on the patron coming in. But, you know, if a vendor has a good time and they have a good experience, then they're going to provide the patron that comes with an excellent experience.
Well thought out. Let's talk about this from the side of vendors. We'll get to patrons a little bit too, but from the side of vendors, you said you're in the 40s, you're looking at fit, but we'd go over, if somebody's listening to us right now and they want to be there. I mean, first of all, this is going to be an audience that is coming that likes to hunt and fish or both, and probably there's other products, I would argue, too, that they probably are interested in as well. I mean, you're open to...
We're open to anything. If you have something to do with the outdoors, or we're going to have flaps 40 rubs and barbecue. They're going to be a featured vendor of ours. So you know, after you go hunting and fishing, you need a way how to cook it. So we're going to be featuring them. So we're going to have, you know, lawnmower tractors, dealers out with us as well. So really, you know, our span is anything that we can fit into the outdoors. And also we're going to have local nonprofits who are offering, you know, either a discount booth rental or a free booth space just to focus on them.
Great.
One of our, you know, actually our featured nonprofit that we're going to be trying to fundraise and you know, give a lump sum of money to at the end of this is Ultimate Experience Outdoors. And
what do they do?
They're a hyper local. Again, we like to focus on that hyper local as an organization. They're out of Alabama here, and basically the concept is we have wounded warriors that live in the area or that live, you know, adjoining states and in the South. And, you know, to thank them for what they did for us and the commitment that they made and they put on the line, their whole nonprofit takes them out on hunting and fishing excursions.
Oh, great.
So it's an awesome concept. And, you know, anytime we can bring light to what they're doing, bring focus on what they're trying to accomplish in our community, and then, you know, hopefully at the end give them some money to help continue their mission.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, and just joining us, we're talking about this is the inaugural. This is the first
one.
At Josh from the Ground. So talking about the Gulf Coast, and let's say it right, Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo.
Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo.
See, I've already trained myself up. I got this. Okay, so.
And the dates, real quick.
The dates are September 21st and 22nd.
Okay, and I want to talk about, because I want to talk about that more going forward. We'll have you back as it gets closer.
Awesome.
But right now, if some vendors, this is kind of, they need to get in with you pretty soon.
This is our focus on there. Like I said, we're shooting for 50 registered vendors. They're going to be, you know, we're selling these blocks off in 10 by 10 sections. Right now we've got 45 vendors. I can't tell you the exact how many booths we sold.
Sure, sure.
But we still have capacity. I mean, we have 72,000 square feet.
Yeah, y'all got a big place.
We got a big place. We'll find some place to fit you in. But really, like I said, we're trying to focus on that excellence. So we really also have a hyper-local focus. So if anybody has questions, they can give us a shout at the grounds.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's give this is the – even though some of you will just probably want to Google the grounds or whatever, but if they're saying, I'm not Googling anything, I got a pen and paper and I'm ready to write something down. Josh, what do they need to write down?
Awesome. So obviously this is one our inaugural first-time event. So we actually have a nice web page for it. It is gchuntfishexpo.com. That's gchuntfishexpo.com. Or, if you're in the mood, you can also give us a shout-out at the grounds at 251-344-4573. That's 251-344-4573.
I'm fired up you're doing this. I am.
I think it ought to be great.
This is something that has been needed. Now I don't have to ride down the road or call Mike on the phone and go, why didn't anybody have a hunting expo, Mike?
It's going to take a little bit to make it grow.
It is.
You got to get that first year under your belt, and then if it's successful, and it should be, you're going to have a lot more national vendors, I think, that'll want to come in and be with you. I can think of one right now. I met with a guy a week and a half ago that's got hog traps. Oh. I'm going to talk to him, get him to come, bring his hog traps.
Oh, yeah. So the extension, that's kind of funny. The extension usually annually has some sort of hog trap demonstration out with us. We're already doing some sort of hog stuff, so might as well bring more involved in it.
Yeah.
Now, I think here for the entertainment for the kids is we let a number of kids get in the trap, and then we remote control drop the door.
That's an excellent
No,
idea.
What is that not?
And leave them in there how long?
Well, until I'm done looking at stuff at the expo. Can we arrange that? Just don't tell my children. We'll have to bait it with, Xboxes or, iPad or something like that. So go in there. You can play games, and then close the door.
Never know they're in there.
That's right. Good stuff. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Appreciate
it.
And we'll be talking about this more over the weeks to come, coming up this September 21st, 22nd, out at the grounds, the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo. And we're coming right back to talk about those exact things, right?
Hunting and fishing.
That's right. That's what we do.
Yep.
Here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. A big thank you to Josh Woods, Executive Director at the Grounds, and he and the crew out there putting on the Gulf Coast Hunting and Fishing Expo September 21st and 22nd. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be out there doing a live version from the site of this show, 2-hour version from 10 to noon on the whatever the Saturday is. I think that's the 21st.
Yeah,
so
21st.
Be out there doing that. And, man, so much to talk about because I'm looking forward to hunting, and we're going to talk some hunting on today's show. But we got to look in the rearview mirror. I got to tell you, the best offshore trip of the year for me was with you this last Saturday. Had a great trip.
That's awesome.
And we got Captain Bobby Abrascato to actually go as far south as we did.
That was awesome.
Yes, it's funny. It was great. This is something you and I were just talking about during the news break, and I don't want to expand the whole thing, but there's something in the DNA. A lot of people, I've often said this, not everybody likes to fish, everybody likes to catch, right?
There's
a lot
of people. Right.
But there are some of us out here, men and women, that like to fish, and it's just deep in the DNA. And Bobby's one of those people that, even though he's now fishing something that's not his normal thing, he's like a kid.
Yeah.
Catching, what I'm saying? And it's just the fun of catching fish.
It is.
It never gets old for somebody.
You either have it or you don't have it, Sean. Yeah. I mean, I think that starts at an early age.
It does.
For most people, I think that starts at an early age.
The joy of fishing.
Most people don't start at 20, 25, 30 years old and get into it and really, get good at it.
Right.
And big at it, you know. They usually go on with somebody else or something, But I think most people, and I'd like to find that out one day, how most people that are really good at hunting and fishing, how did they really get started in it?
We're going to do that on some future shows. We're going to write that note down and have that conversation. But we went out, and Bobby had a blast. We snapper fished. We snapper caught.
Yeah.
We snapper caught. It was like no time. We had five people on the boat, so we had a 10 fish limit, and we hit that pretty darn fast.
I'll never forget. Bobby caught his first one, I think it was, about 8 pounds yeah, or, he ghosted. Or whatever, 10 pounds. And I said, all right, let's take a picture of it, throw it back.
And he's looking at Mike like, what are you talking about? Because, you know, and he'll go snapper fishing some of the real close-in stuff and stuff I fish. And that's, you know, that's by this time of year, that's a great fish if you're at that's some right. of these other spots. But when you go with Captain Mike, that's bait. And so he's like, what? And we say, oh, drop back down.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We got some – I'd say, you know, we didn't have any huge kicker fish, but every fish we kept –
Were
real nice fish.
Yeah, they were. Now, the day before when I went out there, we caught a few nicer ones.
Why we didn't catch them the next day, because you'd already caught them.
Yeah, we were kind of on a mission, too, that we wanted to go on and
catch amberjack.
Go out and go catch amberjack, so we wanted to kind of get our snapper over with.
But they were...
they're real nice.
Real nice fish.
Yeah,
so.
You know, I don't know. I guess the biggest one was how big, maybe. What would you say the biggest one was?
And you know how I am with these. I've always, I always go low, but I think but I had one that's 17, maybe.
Yeah, somewhere around there. I'd say most of them were probably 8 or so to 17 pounds.
Right, that big one was maybe 7. That one big fat one was probably 17. And they, and I've said this before to people, just the same way I do with speckled trout. You will reset your mind on if you want to. I mean, fishing is fishing as long as it's legal. Keep the fish, have fun, enjoy yourself.
Right.
Right. But if you want to get into what stuff weighs, you get a digital scale.
Yeah.
Okay, get a digital scale. They're cheap. You can get these digital scales. You can get a spring scale, too. I just use the digital. Get the digital scale. Make sure you have an extra battery. And start doing this. Whether you're speckled trout fishing or snapper fishing, this is how I trained myself starting maybe 15 years ago or something that I really started doing it with trout. I'd look at the fish. I guess what it weighed, mm-hmm. and then I put it on the scale. And I did that, y'all. I've been doing that for, I'll be pushing 2 decades, not too long. And that's why I think I do pretty darn good. People often say, dang it, Sean, you got right on. I said, it's because I trained myself. I'm not, and I did that by looking at a fish and putting it on a digital scale. And what I'm getting at is the same way I tell folks, be proud of that 2.7-pound speckled trout, because that's a darn nice trout. It's not 5 pounds like everybody thinks they're 5 pounds.
That's
it's
right.
not. But it's a heck of a nice trout. Well, same thing on snapper. You know, they say, oh, yeah, we're catching 30-pound snapper all the time.
No. Yeah, they're all 15, 25-pounders.
Yeah.
You know?
You put them on the scale, and you realize that's a 13-pounder. But that's a heck of a fish.
Yes. 13-pounders are a really fine snapper.
That is a heck of a fish.
We caught one, and I did weigh the biggest one that we caught Friday, and it was 24 pounds.
And that is huge.
And that's a big snapper. That's a really nice snapper.
That's actually my biggest snapper ever. It was like 24.5 pounds.
Yeah.
And I've caught a lot of snapper, and that's the biggest one I've ever caught. Yeah. And that's on a scale. So, but enjoy that 13, 14 pounds. That is a big snapper.
That's a big snapper. Yes, it is.
It's not 30 pounds, but it's a big...
I can remember the day going out there, and if you had a...
We never caught them
that
big back then.
There was no limit back then. But
back when I was a kid, we never caught them that big.
Oh, no. Every now and then we'd catch a big one, but a majority of them were 2 pounds,
uh-huh.
3 pounds.
Uh-huh.
You know, they weren't... And we won the rodeo one time with a 30-pound something.
That's huge.
That's a monster.
That's huge
but
today.
That was years ago. Years
But when
years
we'd
ago.
Fish them, if we caught, like, our big kicker fish would be a 12-pound fish back. We're talking about y'all fishing in the 80s. This would have been the 80s when I started snapper fishing. And if a 12-pound fish back then, you might leave your ice chest open a little bit longer at the marina to see if somebody walked by and see it.
Yeah, right? That's right.
And now it's just a normal.
It's a normal fish. 15, 18, 20, 22-pounders.
But you start breaking 20 pounds.
Yeah.
You got a good fish, even today.
That's right.
Then we went a little further south, which is, talk about watercolor for a second. Any of y'all heading out maybe tomorrow, it could have very well changed by now. But it's funny, the prettier water was further north.
35 miles out was out, up to 35 miles
was
out.
Beautiful
was
water.
Really beautiful water.
Navy blue.
It was a real pretty dark green. It was really pretty. And then we hit about 35 plus, it started getting dirty.
It had to be water coming out of the Mississippi River.
Sure it is. Yes, that's what it is.
Which is, if we get time in today's show, I want to talk about Mississippi for a second. But so you've got the, we got out there and we're right on the edge of that. And knowing that you and I both talked about it as we're running the boat, quite often just the nature of freshwater weighs less than saltwater. It's just and you get what's called a halocline, which is the break between freshwater and saltwater, and you put them together. Quite often you'll get, and I know it from diving in the old days, going through horrible water and then breaking into through a ceiling into clear water towards the bottom.
Yeah, sometimes it's 5-10 foot, sometimes it's 20 foot.
Yeah, you just
and
you
then
don't
once
know
you, until once you get through it, it's beautiful.
And so we got out there, and the water was not near as good looking as it was up the hill some. But the amberjack were there. You had a spot dialed in. We went and caught bait, and that's when we caught my biggest hardtail that I did not get a picture of. You know, out of all the fish, we got a picture of me with the snapper and you with the snapper and amberjack.
Yeah.
You know what picture I want? Me with that hardtail.
Hardtail, yeah.
I've never caught a hardtail that big, and I've seen them at the rodeo.
That was a really big one.
By and see them at the rodeo, and I'm like, man, that's amazing. I've never caught one like that. And I go with Mike, and we're catching bait, and we're catching all these hardtails are big, and I caught that one. I said, he's burning drag. A dang hardtail is a fighter as it is.
Yeah.
And you get him up to 5 pounds or something like that. That's something I catch those every day, man.
You got a bonita on.
It was. I told. That's what I said. I said, oh, I hooked a bonita.
Yeah. I mean, they're big ones out there in deep water. And we were fishing around a rig, and what really kind of amazed me, we all talked about it while we were out there. There's quite a few boats came to the rig and went from the rig, but there was two of them that came out there that were 60 miles offshore. So it was calm, but there's thunderstorms all around. Mm-hmm. And there's two boats came out there, and I don't know how big were they, Sean, 22 foot or something?
Yeah, 21, 22 foot.
Yeah, single engine. Mm-hmm. And then one of them left us and went south.
Right. Y'all might imagine we're already that way, that far south. Yeah. And then they turn and go further south. I've seen some pictures.
I said, look at that boat. He's going south.
I saw a picture of a 21-foot boat that somebody from, I think they were working on the Ram Powell, took that picture. That person was out there at the Ram Powell. Yeah. Now, and I told the stories. We were talking about it when I was a younger man. I did some silly things like that. We would leave in my old cruddy boat out of Biloxi and go to the Chandler. I mean, we did, and whenever we had this conversation too, and this is just I own a single engine 23 Kenner, okay, right. And I fish offshore, but I limit myself. I get to about 20 miles, and that's all I do in my boat.
Right.
Okay. Here's the thing: when everything works right, everything's perfect. It's fine.
Right.
You get the right day when everything works right. You can fish the entire Gulf of Mexico in a single-engine 21-foot boat.
That's right.
But if you've spent decades in the Gulf, you know sometimes things go wrong.
Especially with one engine.
Things go wrong.
If just one thing happens, you hit a log out there, mess a prop up, or your lower unit goes out, or you get trash in the engine, you can't get it, or your battery goes dead. I mean, there's many things that can happen, especially with a single engine. All that can happen with two or three engines, too.
But you just have twice the redundancy or three times the redundancy. And I get it because I'm a guy that, it'd be nice. I'd love to be able to say, I can just go out and buy. I can't right now. The boat I have is the boat I can afford. But I also limit myself. And I find good friends who have boats that I can hop in on and go further offshore. And I get it, y'all. I'm not speaking like holier than thou because I was absolutely guilty of that for many years.
We've all done that, Sean.
So when I see the guy in the 21-foot boat out there, I'm not saying, I'm better. I'm not better. I'm saying, hey, y'all, I did that, and it was not my best decision. I got very lucky a couple times. I told you some of those stories, got very lucky. And now, and things changed when I got married and had children and stuff like that. I definitely with the children in the boat, different story. But even by myself, knowing that I'm a dad to two people that – I just don't do it.
That's right. Something that I did, Sean, when I had my 26-foot Pathfinder, I got serious weather, serious XM weather.
He means serious, not serious.
Anyway.
The dog star.
Yeah, the weather put on it so that, it's not the thunderstorms that are offshore that bother me. It'll get bad. It might blow up for 20, 30 minutes, and it'll calm down, and that's all good. It's not a big deal. But it's the ones that build up on shore and come offshore that's blowing 40, 50, 60-plus miles an hour.
No, this happens every summer.
Yes. And if you're out there enough, you're going to get caught in it. But if you got the XM weather on your boat, it goes into your recorder.
In other words, y'all, if you may not have satellite. I mean, may not have radar on your boat, but you can rig up this system through Sirius XM, and you get what you're getting is a feed of the same way on your phone when you got signal.
Right.
You get the radar. You get that radar.
But you get a little 30 miles offshore, you don't have that.
You got zero. Yeah.
So you can always monitor the weather while you're fishing.
How much does that cost?
The antenna is like $400, give or take a little bit, and then you have to hook it up to your recorder and everything, and whatever that costs if you can't do it, and you have to pay somebody to do it, and then it's like $25 a month to have that.
Okay.
But it's well worth that if you're in a small boat and you're going offshore.
$75 for the summer fishing season, basically.
And if you're taking kids or your wife or whatever, it's well worth it.
So, that's a great tip. All right, come back. We'll talk some more about this. Also, they've posted the hunting seasons. So
we're going to have one this year.
Yeah, we are going to have one. But good. If I remember when we come back, Mississippi, parts of Mississippi, deer hunters may not. Mm. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all here on this Saturday. And before we get into a couple other things on my list, I want to finish up, though, because we talked about fishing with you on Saturday, going out. Techniques for Amberjack. We went out there, we caught those hardtails for live bait. So, and from the time we leave the dock with you when I've been, I mean, it's about bait first. You're not worried about anything till we get bait.
Yeah, you got to have bait.
I mean, and you got to have good bait.
You got to have good bait.
Not just bait. You're obsessive, and this is something that has shown itself out throughout the decades with the huge fish you've caught and the tournaments you've won. And I'm giving people a big sneak peek into this. Mike Ward is as focused on bait as anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah, you got to have bait. You got to have
and the right bait.
That's right. You got to have good bait. You know,
you don't ever say, better. Oh, well, we got some bait. We're okay. I've never heard that from. We got a little something here. Yeah. I've never heard that from you.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we'd have done it right, we'd try to catch some bonita, you know, and try to catch a really big amberjack.
Let's point out that this man, let me get side note. So I remember watching this video. I don't know if y'all were in the rodeo. Was it a rodeo trip?
We did a couple of them, but one of them was a rodeo.
I remember watching your old
one
TV
of them was
show.
A rodeo, yeah.
And yeah, at that point in my life, I probably had never caught a fish as big as the bait that Mike put down. Y'all caught how big of a bonita?
It's probably 12, 13 pounds.
12 or 13 pound bonita, and they put it down, and y'all found an amberjack to eat it.
Yeah.
And that amberjack weighed?
96 or 98 pounds. I can't remember which.
I mean, but those big amber, if y'all go look at the pictures we posted up on the Facebook page, those are 50 pound amberjacks.
Yeah,
so twice
45 to 55 pounds in that range.
You caught an amberjack twice the size of them.
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, they just caught the pending state record amberjack.
Which was?
132 pounds.
Oh, 32.
Okay. Yeah, 132 point something or whatever. Mark
That's
Candy.
Insane.
Mark Candy had that for, oh, golly, I don't know, 30, 40 years, 127 pounds, I believe. Didn't think it'd ever get broke. I mean, that's a monster amberjack. And y'all, somebody caught 130
I don't know that I want to catch that fish.
Yeah.
He'd put a whipping on you.
Yeah. I know a boy that had his best friend fishing that day, and they said that guy fought that fish for 45 minutes, tried to hand that rod off to his buddy, and his buddy said, no, I ain't catching that. I ain't break my back on it. And when the boy got it up and they gaffed it and put it in a boat, it was on a big boat, big charter
boat. Lucky the other guy didn't.
The guy went immediately and went and got in the cabin and got in the air conditioner. He didn't even care about that fish.
I'm telling you, you get a 40-pound amberjack, they'll put a whippet on you, let alone something 132 pounds.
I know when Bobby was fishing for amberjack the other day, he says, now, do I hold this in my hand? Or what do I do? Do I put it in a rod holder? I said, well, you can hold it if you want to, but I would advise you stick it in that rod holder.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to have you do a quick primer for people that may go out and chase some amberjack that hadn't done a lot of it before, because you got it to a science. How you like to do it. Number one, we talked about the bait.
Right.
Number two, the tackle, we put down the snapper tackle. And used a different setup for amberjack.
Yeah, well, heavier duty or stuff. I mean,
heavier duty is understatement.
Well, it's Shimano Tiagras, which is what you'd
50s,
use for,
right?
Yeah, 50s, which is what you'd use for bill fishing. And I've got 200-pound test braid on it. Spider wire. I use spider wire. I love spider wire. Anyway, and we're using, bigger leaders, bigger hooks.
Yes.
And bigger baits.
Yep. And the rod you're running.
Yeah, it's a heavy. It's actually
the rod. And there'll be some pictures, maybe on the Facebook page. You'll see this. There's one of the pictures. You'll say, oh, that's just a weight on there. No, there's an amberjack, a big amberjack on the rod, and it barely has like a 30 degree bend in it. Not even that. Maybe a 20 degree bend.
Yeah, but let me tell you what. I have caught stuff on that rod. And I have hooked stuff on that rod that bends that thing over. I think it's going to rip the rod holder out.
That scares me, because that rod is the size of a pool cue.
Yeah, what it is an 80 Fenwick rod that I custom built myself.
Oh, wow.
And it's got the Fuji guides on it and everything where the guides can't slip. It's the three-footed guides.
Right.
So when you get a fish on there, it don't spin your guides sideways and everything. So, I mean, it's heavy-duty built for that. But we have caught fish on it and had fish on it that, I mean, when it
it bows over and it wants to touch the water.
That's scary.
Yes. We caught those 40, 50, and it didn't, like you say,
barely. You'll see the pictures of it. Barely. Like, I was like, there's a big old amberjack on here, and it's hardly moving this rod.
Yeah.
So your technique is for whatever. They may not have that custom rod that you built for yourself, but get some heavier tackle.
Yes, got to have heavier tackle.
Now, we're talking about fishing around rigs. Yeah. Over a structure would be a different thing, over line bottom or whatever, where they can run, but we got to get them away from the rig.
You got to get them away from the rig. You know, when you pull up to the rig and put your baits down, and you got to watch that rod all the time. When you start seeing that rod start jump around, the tip start mm-hmm. moving around, you know there's something after that bait down there. And just as soon as he gets hooked up,
you have
got to get that boat away from that rig. If you hesitate 1 second, that fish is going to get you in the rig, and all it's got to do is hit one little barnacle down there, yep. and he's gone. He'll break yep. you off. So you were very
attentive to that. You were watching Mike's driving the yep. boat, and he watching that rod, and when it started doing that, and the fish loaded up on it, you immediately... You
got to get away from that rig, absolutely.
And then you fight the fish. Then yes. you get the fish away from the rig, then you fight the fish.
Yeah, and there's two different ways of doing that, too, Sean. I mean, a lot of people like to get the back brace and the... And the stand-up gear and really fight the fish, and that's great. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. But I'm not doing that at 66 years old. I can tell you that right now. If I'm going to catch one, I'm going to put it in the rod holder and fight him from the side of the boat.
Well, that's good for, me at 47. We had a kid on the boat that couldn't have weighed 60 pounds.
Maybe.
And he caught how big of an amberjack?
Oh, he's 45, 50 pound, whatever. Yeah.
So,
you know, but that's how you do it. That's how you catch those big ones with a two-speed. That's a two-speed Tiagra. You put it in that low gear, and he's 8 years old. Beckett was 8 years old.
You'll
and
see
probably
him in the pictures,
50, yeah. 60 pounds, whatever. And he could catch that fish because he could – I don't care how hard that fish fights, he can still turn that
right,
handle
right.
and get him up there.
It's like a good winch.
Yeah. I'll never forget when the two-speeds first came out, Sean – and back when I was doing the TV show,
right,
I had my son and my nephew Philip.
Mm-hmm.
We were fishing the Diet back then. It right. was the Diet. Yeah, I still call it Diet.
Roy Martin Young Anglers yeah, Tournament.
But
yeah.
we was fishing that, and I'll never forget. We were standing in line to weigh those fish, and Philip and Michael had those fish, dragging it up to the scale. And I heard people say,
"Oh, they didn't
there's
it, yeah.
no way
yeah.
those two little 10-year-olds or 8-year-old, yep. however old they were at that time, could have caught those fish. You know they the parents.
I watched it happen yeah. with an 8-year-old. So.
Yeah. But luckily, we had the TV show back then.
Yeah,
and that next week, we had it on TV, and I said, this is for the people that said at the rodeo that there's no way that these little kids can catch these fish. But that was back when the two-speed reels first came out.
New.
They were called Beastmasters then. Shimano Beastmasters. Two-speeds. And you could stick it in the rod holder and those kids could reel it up.
Hey, and it's really gotten my attention too. And I'm sure there are a lot of people listening that have smaller children. This is really a way to go. You want to get them catching big fish. You got the technique to a science. And I really wanted to say thank you for teaching me a lot about amberjack fishing.
We're
going to
do a lot more of it, Sean.
That's
good
stuff.
We're just getting started, buddy.
That's good stuff. All right. I want to quickly just run. I mentioned Mississippi. And I want to say this very quickly.
Yeah.
We'll visit this in depth on the show in the future. Our friends over in Mississippi and the Mississippi Delta, those folks are really suffering. Really suffering. That flooding that I was talking about in May and all that, you see the news stories about what was coming down the Mississippi, all the flooding that was up in Iowa, you know, in Missouri and all those places. Well, that's all come down. And Mississippi Delta, and I'm sure it's the same over in Louisiana and Arkansas on their sides, but I know is the
right.
Mississippi Delta. They've been underwater. I'm talking about ag fields, these farmers, that this is what they do. They have been underwater. Obviously, you say prayer for them, but at the same time, I'm going to try to get organized some of the groups that are helping out over there. There's some groups coming in, help feed and take care of people, but their houses even, they've gotten water in it.
Yeah.
And what happens over there, you're asking to top the levees, and it doesn't. Here's the rub. The way the big levee system is, up and down the Mississippi River, you have bayous and rivers that lead out to the Mississippi. So how do you, if you have a big levee system, how do you keep the river from coming back up?
Sure.
They have locks. Okay, they have big metal doors.
Yeah.
And so when the Mississippi River gets to a certain height, they close the doors so it doesn't back out into the thing. That's how you keep the levee system. Well, when that happens, and then we've had a heck of a rainy summer, and even over there, rainier,
yeah.
and rainy spring as well. All the water that falls, that normally goes into the Yazoo River, Steel Bio.
It can't go anywhere.
All those places over at Tallahatchie, all that stuff can't go anywhere.
Right.
So all the local rain that falls can't go to the Mississippi because they can't open the doors because the Mississippi River is so high.
Yeah.
So they haven't drained, other than into the earth to some degree and into the sky, they hadn't gotten rid of any water in months over there.
Yeah, they had to shut down the hunting on the outside of
the levee. Yeah, outside the levee.
Yeah.
Between the river and the levee.
Deer season, they had to shut that down like the second week, I think, of January because mm-hmm. it was flooding all the islands.
They were already flooded coming into season.
Right.
And you watch some of the Primos boys, and hopefully maybe I'll get one of those guys on the show here soon to talk about it, but they were already dealing with, I was watching their shows that they posted up from what they did last year, and they were in bow season.
Yeah.
Bow season over there. And their sloughs were already full. They still mm-hmm. had some land out, but their sloughs were in bow season.
Yeah.
And it did nothing but keep coming up.
And most of those places, once that water gets to a certain level,
they shut the
hunting down.
Well, that's the side discussion right now. I heard day before yesterday, that they may, because this water stayed up the whole time, they said the deer are in horrible shape. They said any fields that are out of the water over there when you're driving 61's the main route. Like if you drive 20 over and get off of Vicksburg and go up over the Yazoo River, they said it's high ground till you get to the Yazoo River. You got
right.
Redwood
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff there. Then you go over the Yazoo River. Then you're in the Delta. It all of a sudden flattens out. They said there's water standing just everywhere there.
Yeah.
And they said that any field that was out, they said the deer stand in them all day because the food is so poor that's there. They have to eat tons of the nutrition value is so low
right.
because it's just weeds and stuff that's grown up that the deer are standing in the dry spots. They say you go by
and
9 in the morning,
and 3 hundreds of them. Yeah.
And he said they look horrible. And those are some fat deer over there
yeah.
in that delta. They said not now. They look emaciated. They're having really big problems with them. And this is not a ruling yet, but there has been some discussion whether they will be having a deer season at all over there.
Man.
Okay. Doesn't mean the rest of the state of Mississippi, but that zone in there.
Right.
I'm not saying this is confirmed. This is just some of the chatter.
Yeah.
That they may not. Y'all think there's some money in some clubs in the Black Belt of Alabama? Take a look at the clubs that run up and down the Mississippi River and in the Delta. Some people pay a lot of money.
Big time.
A lot of money to be hunting in there.
Yeah.
And they may not get a season. And I'll tell you, there are probably a lot of them that are good enough conservationists that won't want to have a season anyway because of what it could do to their herd long term. But that's how serious this is. Number one, the farmers that have lost a whole year of income.
Yep.
Pray for those folks. People have gotten water in their homes over there. But also, the fact that you're going to have essentially a no season in those areas if nothing changes soon. But as soon as we find out more, because I know there's a few people from around here that get to hunt over there.
A bunch. I know quite a few from here that go over into Delta.
They could lose a whole season. All right, we're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Big thank you to Josh Woods with the grounds and the Hunting and Fishing Expo coming September 21st and 22nd out the grounds. We'll talk about that more going forward. Do you want to talk a little bit of hunting?
Might as well, Sean.
Okay. Just because state of Alabama. Yeah, finally got the information up over at OutdoorAlabama.com. They've had the tentative season, but now they have the locked-in season. So let's, before we run out of time, we'll start with doves. We'll do doves and teal, and then we'll get into everything else. So the North Zone this year, of course, as always, 15 per day, 90-day season.
Okay.
Okay. September 7th, the North Zone comes in, and it goes through October 7th, October 27th.
So 7th September, through 27th.
So okay. September 7th through October 27th.
North Zone.
Then it, so it's out, then it comes back in November 23rd through December 1st. I call that the Thanksgiving season.
Yeah.
You know, that little one there. And then it comes back in December 14th and goes through January 12th. Which, by the way, if for some reason I didn't want to hunt deer anymore, tell you what, up near State Line where we are, that's when we finally start getting we get some doves early, but man, when it's on in the heated deer season, we get some doves.
in December and January up at our camp.
Y'all get them?
Well, in the past, mm-hmm. yes. That's when they would really show up, especially when we used to have soybean fields and stuff. That's when they'd really get on it big time.
I and mean, you're like, you're torn. Tons, like, I don't want to be shooting in here because we're deer hunting, but
no,
dang
I wasn't
it. Look
torn.
At,
I'd a lot rather go deer hunting personally. You'd be torn.
I did, but I still let them alone. But okay, so that is the North Zone. North Zone, once again, September 7th opener through October 27th for the first split. Second split, November 23rd through December 1st. Third split, December 14th through January 12th. Okay, South Zone. And that's everybody, you know, that's Baldwin, Mobile.
Right.
What is it? Here's the list. Baldwin, Barber, Coffee, Covington, Dale, Escambia, Geneva, Henry, Houston, and Mobile counties. Everybody yeah. else is in the North Zone. There's just a couple, a handful here in the South Zone. 15 per day, 90-day season. September 14th for the opener, so a week later than the North Zone.
Right.
Goes through November 3rd. So goes that extra week in all the entirety of October.
Right.
So September 14th is the opener, goes through November 3rd. Comes back in November 23rd through December 1st, the Thanksgiving season. And then the last part's the same as North Zone, December 14th through January 12th. So not a lot of difference between – it's no. a week difference. There's 1 week shift within the first split between South
right.
and North. Everything else is the same.
Same. Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that.
So they're
easier to keep up with it.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, you start the weekend of the 7th of September in the North Zone, the 14th in the South Zone.
Yeah.
Which is good because, like you and I were talking during the news break there, my millet, thank you, dear, is a little bit behind schedule. They have flat hammered my millet, and it's fine. It's starting to put on seed heads now, but they keep in that place. It's like a riding lawnmower going through there. Like, I'm feeding y'all protein. I've got soybean fields.
Yep.
Nah, they're going to go eat the millet.
Well, millet's good, too.
I know. Ask them. They're in there.
One
like,
thing about a deer. They're not going to go get on one thing and stay on it. That's the only thing
they're
going to eat.
And people think about that. That's one of the
little here, little there, little over there, little over here. They just move around.
That's a trap I think people get into. And you and I are both big food plot guys and talk about how to make them better. And we're going to get in. Somebody emailed me the other day. I'm going to go back and talk about the throw and mow technique more this fall right. that I've done. But the food plots are good for a part of what deer need. Deer right. They're not cattle.
No,
they don't just stand in the same. They eat a whole bunch of different stuff. I mean, they're browsers. They're not grazers. They're browsers.
They move around.
So
they
yes,
they do not sit in one place.
Although it has seemed like they are grazing the millet.
Yeah.
Side note. All right. Also, here's a change. The teal season, blue wing teal season, yeah. is moved. And thank you, state of Alabama. I think maybe they did this last year, but I don't remember. But this year, I know it used to open. It would have opened September 7th, not now. This year, it opens the 14th of September and goes through September 29th,
okay.
which is what most of us have. And you're rolling the dice. It just depends on weather.
Yeah.
And
whether
the teal migration, like it's like a bell curve. I mean, there are teal here now somewhere, I would bet, in August.
Sure.
Somewhere there's been a couple teal come through.
Sure.
And in January, there will be teal come through the Mobile Tensile Delta, blue wing teal come through the Mobile Tensile Delta. But the bulk of them come through sometime September, early October. So
yes.
that's what you're trying to do. You know, this could be a year that usually I'm cursing that we start too early. Maybe this year will be different. But weather-wise, the way it has been the last 5 or 6 years, I'm happy they moved it later by a week. Instead yeah. of opening September 7th and closing the 22nd, it opens September 14th and goes through the 29th. I think that's a better chance for hunters on the causeway to get some better hunts in. So
you don't have time to hunt anyway.
That is true. That is true. I'll be on a tractor, but I can fantasize about it. All right, we'll do this all again next week. Got to get out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next.